Good morning or afternoon, depending on where you are.
Morning.
Last time, I believe we were talking about actual cost. Let's share my screen. Bum, bum, bum. Every time I share my screen, the chat and everything disappears. Like, no, you really don't want your chat up there. You don't really want the you don't want the transcript up there. You just think you do. So we're just gonna go ahead and get those. I love Zoom. Actually, I love it when technology decides to make a decision for you without asking, because yeah, we're all too dumb to make our own decisions.
Yeah,
I'm
it
active.
moves it all the way off to the side. Like for me, it moves it to my whole other computer. I'm like, what is it? Where did all my controls go?
Exactly. My Mac does that to me all the time. Like, if I get a notification on my main window and a Slack message, I have three monitors and I have my desktops lined up in this very specific order. And if you click on one of those, it will grab that desktop and move it to wherever the active one is and swap them. And I'm just like, no, just move to that desktop. You don't need to actually physically reorganize them. It drives me nuts. It really does. Especially when you're working on a single screen and like you have things laid out in a particular order and all of a sudden you swipe left and you have Slack instead of the spreadsheet I was working on. Like, no, no, stop it. Okay. Oops, why is that not working? That was me. Last time we were talking about claims returned, and just a slight reminder, and switching claims returned, that instead of using the current method that it's used now, is possibly using the transfer accounts to hold those. So we're talking about that. Today, I would like to kind of start talking about open credits. And I know that the people that were in discussions with Holly, we were talking about this as well with her. And for probably everybody on this call, you're probably aware of that when an item is returned, the refund and the credit are, or I'm sorry, the credit and the refund are both processed at the same exact time. So the account is credited, which puts it in then a negative balance, and then the refund is issued. That's a problem for people who have actually paid something on the account, and that's where the refunds to process manually report comes from. This is also an issue with Berkshire Transfer and other transfer accounts because it's not stuck in that limbo state. It's just automatically closed out of the system. So there is an open ticket that was originally written by Holly to break those into two separate instances. We can discuss that a little bit more if people would like. What I was interested in is the was partially that, but also the interface for handling open credits. Again, this is based on the same interface principles as the other two, where there is a drop down to select what action you want to perform, search and filter options, and then the open credits that are currently in the system. The idea behind this, like with the other interfaces, is that it would allow you to s coordinate off or chunk off pieces of the fee find system to specific users. So, for instance, somebody in your business services account who is responsible for cutting checks could only ha would have access to this, and you possibly could limit that they don't even know what the instance title is, just that so and so needs a check cut for something. So that's kind of the idea behind this interface. I was kind of wondering what people thought of that idea and approach, first off, and then we can probably get into some more of the details of what can be done with open credits.
I like the idea of having them be able to pull them up right kind of on demand. Like right now, we have to export every single cash transaction and siphon out the negative balances to find the ones that were credited, and it's a huge pain in the butt right now. So I could imagine a workflow where you're processing credits. And I guess the question is, like, where do they go if you do the transfer? If you're doing them one by one and transferring them, where does that go? I guess right now nothing gets, like, you can transfer an individual transaction, so I guess it would be the same process. We don't use transfer right now, so it's sort of a little bit opaque to me how it would work. I know how it worked in Olive, and that is sort of the, there's a distinction for our workflow, whether or not something's been reported or transferred. Like if we haven't told the bursar about it, I don't need to know about the credit. It just goes away, right? So that's sort of what I'm thinking is like these credits, would they only appear if they didn't cancel something out? Like that's the, I guess that is the piece that I'm not sure what that workflow looks like.
I think that's something we'd have to kind of something to kind of think through too. You're right. Like if it's moved to a transfer account, and I kind of want to keep the idea of transfer accounts as a bubble and not just specifically Bursar, because they are used for if we do use them for the claims returned, or we use them for Bursar transfers, or they're used for outside collections, or who knows what. I think when an item is returned, the credit needs to go onto that transfer account. Right now, what it's kind of doing is it's moving it out of the transfer account, crediting it, and then refunding it. So it's treating it like it's an active fee fine on the person's account. I guess my, and please, anybody say no, this doesn't sound good. I think with my mindset is that the credit should be placed on that transfer account, and then whatever process is acting on that transfer account then does the refund. So for instance, if it's a if you're trans if it's an external system, it's a cue to say, I need you to transfer this credit to the external system. And then maybe there's a setting on the transfer account that says automatically close out any credits. So it just closes it out as a refund. But I feel that that kind of has to be handled separately from the regular accounts. Does all that babbling make sense to Sorry.
I guess we need to develop a system for folks who are not using transfer accounts at all, right? Like it has to be a system that makes sense regardless of your workflow. And for me, like if we haven't transferred it, I don't want to see it. Like you know what I mean? Like if it hasn't, if nothing's happened with the debit and the ca credit cancels it out, I don't necessarily
Don't care.
need to see it, right? Like I wouldn't need to see
Agreed.
it on this
Agreed.
open credits because it's not, from my mind, it's not an open credit. It's been canceled and it's canceled, truly canceled, as opposed to a credit needs to be issued.
Agreed on both points. I think transfer accounts and in my mind, transfer accounts and the quote unquote active account or the main account that's used in Folio, I think should be treated exactly the same. So the difference with the two is that I guess in a way you assume that if it's in a transfer account, it's already been paid. So you have to issue a credit. And then when it's transferred or closed in that account, then you're issuing basically the refund on the external account, possibly. For the quote unquote main active account, I agree 100% as well. If there is a credit issued and it hasn't been paid, so like somebody checks out a book, it's aged to loss, they're fined $150, they return the item, they get a credit for $150, and there's now zero balance on their account, that shouldn't show up in this screen. It's only if they paid, let's say, $50 towards it, then that $50 should show up here. Yes, David.
Why I guess I'm a little bit confused about why we're even talking about introducing credits into something that hasn't been paid. Because as of now, if you are billed and you return the item, there isn't a credit. The bill is waived because of an action where the item has been returned. So there would never be a circumstance unless you completely rip out and change how fees and fines work, which just this seems overcomplicated. To me, a credit is something that is only issued when you have paid for something. Somebody lost the book, they paid $150, they return the book, and if your rules let them get a credit, then the credit is issued. You would never issue a credit if the thing hasn't been paid. And that would work for your transfer account idea as well, presumably, because if the thing has been transferred, then that is essentially a form of payment, right? The existing bill has been closed. But like I'm really nervous about the idea of fundamentally changing how the thing that we do dozens of times a day, because the only way we get books back is when we bill people for them and they finally return them, and also when they get renewed and all these other things. That would be just adding a huge layer of complexity to a process that already works. So that's where I'm just kind of confused.
That makes sense. That makes sense. So yeah, I was thinking of trying to keep consistency between the transfer accounts and the primary account, but I see what you're saying too, is like being transferred out is basically being paid in a sense. It's a form of payment. So yeah. So not having that consistency would make sense in that point in time. That makes perfect sense. So then in that case, yes, yeah, so something's returned, if there's no payments to it, it's waived. But if something's returned and there was a payment towards it in any amount, that payment is then credited to that person's active account.
That's right. And I think that would be true of any transfer or a payment, right? If it's been reported to someone else, or if it's someone else's responsibility now and it's already been transferred or the person paid it, then the credit would come into play. I totally agree, David. You're right. That clarifies it. That's exactly how I expect it to work, also.
Okay. Then we can keep that workflow. That makes sense. And you're right. It would be a deviation from the way it's currently running. So yeah, we could do it that way. Now, I do know with some of the original discussions, and right now I just have the open one up here, is open credits is pr with some of the discussions with Holly, there was the idea of applying the credit from one fee fine account to another or multiple fee fine accounts on a single user's record. Is that still something people are interested in, or is that kind of seem like it's too much, or would it be all like to have? I know, David, you were really heavy in those discussions with Holly when we were talking about that
Remind
as well.
me what this was. I've lost track.
It's okay. It's basically what would happen is in the scenario I said before, let's say somebody had a checked out a book at age to loss, they got a bill for $150, they paid it, then returned the item, they would have $150 credit on their account. One of the workflows that Holly set up and we discussed was being able to take that $150 credit and use it as quote unquote a payment towards other open fee fines on the person's account. And I know we've discussed like, does it pick the largest one, the oldest one, or can we manually do it? I was just kind of curious if that functionality was still needed slash wanted, and kind of what the priority around that sort of functionality would be.
So I would be interested to hear what others think about this. This came out of, in part, the fact that this was functionality that existed in Olay. And I will say it is not trivial to figure out the logic of that. And part of that is because, like, you need to be able to, if you're trying to do anything where it's like automated, you have to take into account things like you do not want to get trapped in an endless loop of they paid for this lost item, but they still have this other lost item, and I have now issued them a credit and paid for that lost item, and that's closed that loan, but they were talking to us about that item, and you know. So I would be interested to hear what other people think about this. I think from Chicago's perspective, we've eliminated a lot of our overdue fines. Since that functionality existed in Olay, so this just comes up less often, and we've certainly lived without it for 4 years. So I'm interested to hear what others have to say. I might argue if I were if I if we were to prioritize this feature at all, I would ar almost argue that you should have to just select which bills you want to pay and not let the system try to do it automatically, because I think that's going to take us down a rabbit hole, but
I have a few thoughts too, but I'd like to hear what other people think.
we don't have any use for that functionality. I mean, we just report it to the controller, and they do, like, we're not, we don't care what we don't have any overdue fines. So I agree with David in terms of the complexity of it. Like, I can't really imagine. I just want credits to work. Like, I can't really imagine how this whole thing is gonna get developed. I'm not a developer, but like, I think it sounds very, very complex. And we're doing so much less billing, and trying to make it as simple as possible. So, I mean, if other folks want it, that's totally fine, but it's not something we would need here.
And I think Cornell kind of falls in the same boat. I could also see a manual workaround for this is that you have a payment type of system credit and you just manually process everything. It's a lot more work for staff, but I could see you doing that process manually. I agree if this is a route that others outside of this meeting say, yes, we would like to have some way of applying these credits to other accounts. I think it should be a completely it should be a manual process. It should not be an automated process where you select what accounts you want to apply to and it applies it to that account. Yes, David.
I was just going to say, I mean, this is part of the, I mean, part of the reason this was one of the underlying reasons of saying, like, issue the credit. I mean, the other is the transfer accounts, but issue the credit and then this the refund is a separate thing, was the idea that you could stop and say, I am going to, I don't think the, I think it can't be totally manual, because I think from an accounting perspective, you would need to be able to say, we used this credit to pay for this. Like, we use this, and I don't even think it was across accounts. I think that the idea was across fees on an account.
Yes, yes.
Right. So, but even there, like, you need to be able on both bills, you need to say, this credit, we issued $100, we used $100 of this credit to pay these five bills with their UUIDs or the HRID. And on those bills, it would need to say, these were paid with a credit from this other bill. And then there were, and then there's $50 in credit remaining, and then you manually say, and now I have refunded this. That is what a financial system should be capable of doing. I think manually selecting which bills you do is probably the easiest way to do that, but it would be very low priority compared to other needs at Chicago. So yeah, I just want to hear if others just, you know, for, would need this more readily.
And for our libraries, I can't really speak for most things. I don't know how many of them we're doing this, but I would see a concern that for an ECS environment, someone want to do this, someone to process manually, someone to do not entirely other means. And I know more than a few libraries that look at only specifically just that one transaction, refunding or crediting it, as opposed to recrediting or funding a balance. And that might cause problems with the bursar's office because they want to look at specific refunds per particular transactions as opposed to a running balance of some kind.
That makes sense. Okay. I can rework the ticket slightly around that, and throw in a few ideas. The other thing that came up in a side conversation, outside of this, was the need to have expiration dates on a credit. And this primarily came up when I was talking to Joseph from Spokane and some of the policies around the public libraries, that they are only allowed to hold on to credit. And please do not quote me 100% on the time frame, but I believe it's like 1 year. After a year, that money is absorbed by the institution and they're no longer allowed to refund it. Is that functionality that other libraries have either a specific date range or a specific date, i.e., would your institution say at the close of fiscal year, July 1st, we are no longer allowed to issue any outstanding credits if they have not been processed?
We do for our graduating seniors, like we have a, we clear their loans after that period of time. So we have a workaround. But for alumni, we only give them 1 fiscal year past their graduation to return books, and then they're not eligible. So it's, you can sort of come up with some of it on the, I guess you can't really do it on the fee fine policy because it's sort of a fixed date as opposed to a rolling, like 365 days past age to lost or whatever. So we do have that. We work around it by getting those books off their accounts before at that date.
Yeah, I mean, ours is a library policy, not an externally imposed rule or law, so we can always make exceptions. But our general our policy is it's 365 days after you pay for the thing. Like if you find the item and return it, but since everything is manual and frankly, like that you they would have to bring it to our attention. Right now, there's not even really a workaround, right? Because there's nothing, right? Like we have to like talk to our budget office to have a check cut for somebody, and so it's easy to catch, and it's pretty rare.
I will freely admit, I don't know what our policies are, and I probably should because I do the bursar transfer. Basically, our bursar's office has an internal policy when they can no longer refund money. I have not hit that yet. But to be fair, 90% of the time, we don't get returns after somebody has graduated because if they have an outstanding bursar account, they have to pay everything off and they're more apt to return items that they have. Otherwise, if they don't pay off their bursar account, they don't get their diploma. So, or their transcripts. So, they really want to get that paid off. So, we'll get a bunch of people returning stuff. Faculty and staff are a little bit different because we don't have an external collection agency for them anymore. I believe if a faculty or staff member returns something that goes to our business services office, they may have a 1 year kind of limit on it. But it does sound like this will be used by other institutions. And so it would you more apt have a, it sounds like it's also more that you would have a specific time frame, like it's 365 days or 2 weeks or 6 months from the time the credit was issued to when they can collect it and not a set date. Does that sound correct?
Probably. I also wonder, and again, this is getting into, I mean, this is, you're giving me PTSD flashbacks of the fee fine
Sorry.
conversations in LA, but like, for that kind of thing, should the credit continue to be open, or should there be a mechanism that essentially closes, like resolves the credit, not as a refund, but as a there is no credit anymore because the credit has reached the time frame at which point, right? Like you wouldn't want to be opening the person's account and see a $150 credit in perpetuity. Again, yeah, like we do have a credit agency, but again, it's like we want the book back. So we're not going after people who, I mean, if they've already paid, no one's going to get tracked down because it's resolved. It's the people who still have our stuff, and then that's all moot anyway, right? Like,
Agreed. I think to stick to
that was
sorry.
not what I meant.
Oh, okay.
There we go. Was not laughing at Olga. It was thumbs up.
Oh, okay. That's okay. I think to stick to, I want to try anything that we do from here moving out is to try to ensure that the fee fine records stick to at least some resemblance of an actual accounting record. And from my very my 1 year, which was a half year, which ended up being a half year college course in accounting, I do remember there is a specific way that you can write off open or write off open accounts where money is owed to an outside organization. Because I remember the example coming up was gift cards. Like gift cards are good for 365 days. How do you write this off? And the account was closed using a specific terminology, use specific terminology. I think that's where we would have to go with this as well. Is that any, if we do decide to go down on this route where credits can only be held by for a specific time frame, once it hits that time frame, an automated process would close the credits with something. I'm just going to throw a terminology, a credit absorbed by institution or something of that nature. Yes, David.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I was just making sure that we're not always assuming that there is an outside entity because we don't all have outside entities. Some of us don't, thank God, have to deal with bursar transfers.
Well, in
All
the
of
case
these
of
conversations just make me so glad that we don't do that.
when I'm saying outside entity, I'm thinking more of it's an account payable to somebody else. So in this case, the outside entity would be actually the user. So the money is owed to the user. They don't collect it or they don't get it within a year. So therefore, it's absorbed by the institution as additional profit. And I always hated that because then you have to add it to another line item somewhere else as profit, is some sort of weird profit, and then it throws off the balance sheet, and I was always off by 5 cents, and it drove me nuts. Anyways, we weren't allowed to use accounting software or spreadsheets either. We had to do everything manually, which was evil. Of course, I went to school back in the this was back in high school, back in the dark ages when I did that. I mean, theoretically, if you have a sort of office that's taking care of this, my guess is that these would be closed out anyways before that 1 year because you'd be just writing checks and sending them out on a regular basis. But let's see, what else is there around credits? Is there any other concerns, workflows, or questions people have around credits and refunds to patrons? I'm trying to think of any other deviations in this that. Yes, David.
I mean, the only thing that I can think of with all of this is like is just the hill I always die on for everything, which is like you need to have someone with the right level of permissions to like override or reverse any kind of automated action. So like if you do have something where like a credit is getting closed out after a year and then you have the right person complain about a thing, you need some way of being able to go back and account for, no, we actually are going to issue that refund after all, even though it's day 366. You could do that as a just a manual process, but like right now you can create a manual fee, but you obviously can't create a manual credit. So just whatever, just bear keeping all that in mind so that you don't end up in any kind of system where this is the rule, and no one, no matter what godlike powers they have been granted by the library, can reverse it because it's just baked in.
That's a good point. And Scott, since you're in an ACS environment, and actually also, no, five colleges, you're not in ECS, correct? Or are
That's
you in
correct.
ECS?
We're ECS, yes.
Do you think that any of these credits or refunds will be processed centrally, or would they be taken care of by the individual data tenants?
Individual data tenants, they all function separately and they all have everything going through either their bursar or the library directly.
That makes life a lot easier. Thanks.
Well, simple is good.
I know. I mean, I have heard that some ECS or potential ECS environments were interested in central fee fine processing, which could po work possibly work, but I think it would be very tricky. But yeah, okie dokie. What else was there? So as I said, the two interfaces I had here, I had one which was a unlocked one, which had the instance title and had access to the loan details, and then a locked one, which would be someone that would not have access to the loan data, and it would just show the actual credit information. From there, they could say transfer or refund the credit, and in this case, transfer credit is paying another account with it. Well, if there's no other questions with that, we can move on to another one, which there's a setting in fees and fines, but has never been used. It is another interface for replacement with copy. I know that we have in the fee fine settings that if you do a, that there is an option that if you say something is replacing with a copy, that it allows you to charge a processing fee. I was extending on that and actually making a replacement with copy interface and allowing, again, this was kind of like the credit interface where you could potentially, well, no, actually, we need, never mind. I strike that. You would need to know what the loan information is, but you might not actually need to know what the fee fine information is. My question is, I guess, is how many people are allowing replacement copies and who normally takes care of that? Is that your billing coordinator or is it somebody in LTS? Yes, David.
So for us, it's circulation staff in consultation, if it's not clear. I mean, we have sort of guidelines where basically like, oh, does the ISBN match? Then yes, unless the condition is not good. But if it's like not an exact match, then we reach out to the selectors for approval. And I mean, the payment type that is we're paying for this with a replacement copy has worked fine for us. I don't know how much we would need a separate functionality at this point.
Okay. What about everybody else who's doing replacement copies? How are you kind of handling it now? And do you think this is kind of overkill?
Ours is similar to David's. I mean, we do accept them, but it's pretty casual. And if we accept it, we just waive the replacement. Well, let's see, what do we do? I think we would check it in maybe and mark and then charge them only because we don't want the thing on their account, right? We want the loan off, but then we would charge them just the processing fee. It's a little bit fudgy,
Yeah,
but it does work.
we just created a payment type. There's cash, credit
Oh.
card, replacement copy, and
Oh,
then you just pay the
interesting.
fee with the replacement copy payment type. Just made it easy for ourselves.
So
Is
does
that
that mean what happens to the loan? I guess it becomes lost and paid.
becomes lost and paid, which closes the loan and takes it off the patron's account.
Yeah. Do you pay it with the whole Do you pay the whole amount? Or
Yeah.
do you don't charge a processing
We
fee?
don't charge a
Yeah.
processing fee.
We
In fact,
honestly don't. We say we do, but we often don't.
our processing fee had gotten so ridiculously high that I think it was at, I'm sure it was actually disincentivizing people to bring in replacement copies, which is what we actually wanted. And instead they were like fighting and claiming to have returned things that they clearly lost, because it was like, oh, you can get this for $10 on Amazon, but we are charging you $35 as a processing fee for the privilege of giving it to us. And I convinced the higher powers to eliminate it, and it has, I think, met getting more replacement copies. So yeah, we just, but you can also like do that in Folio by having a separate processing fee that is charged at the moment of aging or being billed as lost. Because that's the other thing, is sometimes somebody loses something and it hasn't aged lost in the system, so you just have to bill it. You have to declare it lost to create the bill, and then you close it out. So if you just keep those two bills separate, then you don't have to worry about doing partials and things like that. That's why I just, yeah, the just creating the replacement copy payment type, which you could just do in 5 seconds of the in the settings, was our workaround, and it has worked great.
Do you run into any issues with somebody has something that ages to loss, they give you a replacement copy, so then you pay that fee fine as fully paid with the replacement copy, and then later return the original item.
I mean, it depends on what you mean by a problem.
Or do you
The
see that as a problem?
system, right, the I don't see it as a problem. The system is not going to flag. I mean, I guess the system would say, hey, this thing is lost and paid. So if you're trying to return it, and that would let a staff member look into it,
Right.
which is fine. I consider it honestly the patron's responsibility. If they lost something, paid for it, and then found it, to tell us if there's something we need to do for them. I don't feel like I need the system to be telling me, oh, hey, this is was paid, or this had a replacement copy, or this had this other thing. It happens, frankly, so rarely that it's easy enough to tell within the bill history like what the situation is. And then we have a separate policy that I didn't copy over, where it's like, if you provided a replacement copy and you find the book within a year, we'll give you like whichever copy we decide. Right?
I
Like,
like
well,
that.
like if you find the original like 6 months later, then we'll look at the two and decide which one we're going to give you back. For whatever reason. It's the same reason we have a policy that is never used, where we're like, it's a $150 lost item fee. We reserve the right to raise that. If you lost something that was like, worth 2 grand or something.
Yeah, we do the same thing specifically for textbooks because a lot of the textbooks are 400 or 500 bucks, and they take it out and they actually get a deal at 150 bucks. We've actually had, and this was years ago because I was actually still in CERC, a few students that would check out one of the biochemistry would check out the biochemistry textbooks from the library, pay the $150 lost fee, and then sell it to the bookstore for 100 bucks after the semester was over as a used book. So yeah, you got to give students credit. They think of everything. Okie dokie. So our replacement system is a little odd. It's kind of like it with everyone else. It's a combination of the billing coordinator and we our two billing coordinators. And believe it or not, we only have two billing coordinators for all of Cornell University, which is insane. But it's a combination of one of our two billing coordinators with library technical services. And the workflow kind of is when somebody asks to do a replacement copy, it's accepted by the billing coordinator who does an initial check, but then it has to go to LTS for final verification. And if they do not agree on the copy, then it's declined flat out. They also, we don't have a flat replacement fee. We have kind of a floating fee, and it's whatever Library Technical Services tells us. So for instance, if it's just a standard regularly bound book, we don't charge a replacement fee usually, our processing fee. But if it's something that needs to be sent out for stiffening or something of that nature, then we might charge them $25, $30. And we won't know that until it actually goes to LTS. So our referral is slightly different. But it sounds like this functionality would be fairly low priority, at least for the people in this group, if not really needed at all.
Yeah, it sounds like the only workflow we don't really have. I mean, your workflow, there certainly isn't anything now, but David's works because they waive the whole thing. Like, if you wanted to keep the processing fee, there isn't really a mechanism to do that easily.
No, I think there would be.
But how would you keep it on the, like, if you don't pay the entire amount, it's
They're two
not going to
separate line
close the
items.
loan. The loan is going to stay on their account, right?
Oh, is that how the processing fee works? The processing fee keeps the loan open?
Well, ours is
I
all
mean, that
one
makes
fee.
sense. I
Like,
don't
we
know because
only
I
have
don't,
one fee, so.
I think you could waive the lost fee and then just pay the processing fee. So if you had a processing fee of $50 and a loss fee of $150, you could waive the $150 fee and then pay the $50 processing fee with like what David is doing with the replacement copy, and that should allow the loan to close out.
Right, but I'm saying if you want to charge the processing fee, you would have to wait for the user to pay it or, right? Like,
Well,
or to
but is that
transfer
not
it
what
or.
you would? Well, I mean, I guess part of this is, I mean, first of all, I don't know because we don't have the separate fee, so I don't know what happens to the actual loan.
I don't either.
But so I don't know if the processing fee is treated more like an overdue fine or more like the lost item fee. Like, I don't know. Can you have, and that would be a question that we could answer is, can you have an open processing fee, but the loan itself is closed? Like, does paying the lost item fee close the loan, but the processing fee is left because it's a processing fee, it's not for the thing. So if you had those two, but then the other sort of philosophical question would be, well, do you want the loan to be closed because they haven't actually paid the processing fee, so they do still need to do that, right?
Right. Yeah, it's
And
complicated.
I don't know. So like, I mean, from a technical perspective, you absolutely could pay the lost item fee with a replacement copy payment type, and the processing fee would remain. I think the part that we don't know is, and then blocks would be based on either a law, you know. I guess the question is, what happens to that item? Does if you pay a lost item fee, but not the processing fee, somebody's got to go in and test that.
Well, and actually, yeah, I agree. So it needs to be tested, but I would also then pose the question is how would people want it to work? So one of the ideas is to, I don't want to say simplify, but combine. Right now they're two separate transactions. So you have when an item is marked as lost in the system automatically or manually, there is the lost replacement fee that can be assessed. There is a overdue fine that can be assessed, and then there's a processing fee that can be assessed. So theoretically, if you have policy set up for all three of those on a single loan, you have three fee fine accounts that are generated for that user. Oddly enough, I don't know why it's called an account in Folio, but you have three separate accounts. My inclination is to get rid of the three separate accounts and that you have one account that represents all the fees and transactions for that loan. So instead of having three separate bills, you have one bill that's representative of everything around that item or that loan. Would you expect that if somebody like the scenario that we were talking about with replacement copies, if somebody gives you a replacement copy, but they still owe the an overdue fine or a processing fee, would you expect the loan to still remain open? Or would you expect the loan to close? Yes, go ahead, David.
I don't know that I would have an, I mean, I think that might vary by institution, but I'm just looking at the lost item fee policy page, and I'm pretty sure the loan gets closed because it's got settings like if lost item returned or renewed, removed lost item processing fee, yes or no. If lost item replaced, remove lost item processing fee, yes or no. Replacement processing fee, which is different from the lost item processing fee, and a no fee fines shall be refunded if a lost item is returned more than blank. So, like, some of this is like there were places put into this to tie in functionality that doesn't exist. So,
Yes.
one thing would be there is a place for a replacement, there was a concept of a replacement processing fee that was separate from and different from a lost item processing fee, right? The lost item processing fee was a sort of you have inconvenienced us and we are charging you $5 because you were a bad person, and we
Right.
are judging you. And the replacement processing fee is you have created work for us and we are charging you for our labor to process this thing. I
Okay.
don't know if I don't think the replacement processing fee actually like does anything. Like I think you can put that amount in the lost item fee policy, and I don't think it, because there is no mechanism of processing a replacement copy, therefore there is no trigger for a replacement processing fee to be created.
I want to
But
say, yeah. Oh,
I
sorry,
was
go
just gonna
ahead.
say, but in Susan's example, then if you did have that, that would be the way you would do it, right? You would potentially select, you would pay for the lost item fee and the lost item processing fee with the replacement copy. It would close the loan, and then you would create a replacement processing fee as part of that transaction. But that would require building up an actual replacement copy trigger that's different than just me typing in the word replacement copy instead of credit card.
Right. I thought I saw somewhere, not, I'm hallucinating. I'd like to blame it on something else other than my brain being the way it is, but I thought I saw somewhere that there was an option to say replace item or replace copy on the loan record or in the fee fine, but there isn't. So you're right. That's just basically that field in there does absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I think all of those were placeholders. Like, do you accept a replacement copy? Like, that was for future development. So I think
So
it's there if we decide to develop it.
exactly. Again, yeah.
should be
And
grayed out.
And I actually that is on my list of revamping that policy is either removing those or graying them out and making them inactive since they don't do anything, as well as rearranging some of the things. I guess I kind of go back to my original question though, is that if you have somebody that if the fee fines are based on a single loan and you have somebody that has a $150 overdue fine or lost fine and a $50 replacement fine or replacement fee. And they pay the $150 but don't pay the 50, should the loan be closed or should it still be open? And the ramifications of that would be if the loan is still considered open, then it would count against their lost items count. Yes, Katie, and then I saw David unmuted, so. You're still muted, Katie.
This cannot ever find my little arrow. Okay.
It's okay.
I have windows right in front of me, so like this glaring If they return the item or pay for the item but do not pay the processing fee, I would expect it to close and that processing fee remain. I don't think you need to pay both, because that's just kind of like David was saying, a labor charge. So I would expect the loan to close.
Would you feel the same with an overdue fee?
Yeah. And that's exactly, I mean, overdue fees are only charged when the loan is closed. That's exactly how I would treat it. And you can block somebody because of the amount of money they owe,
Correct.
which we do, right? Like we block people at $50 and we block them if they have a lost item. So if they returned the item or paid for the item, then the loan is closed because they have paid for it. Any processing fees would simply add towards blocking their account for other reasons. I would consider the loan resolved, which I think, Susan, was that your point? Was that you were afraid that the loan would not be resolved?
Exactly. Yes. I think if they've replaced the item, then it shouldn't be on there, because the fee fine should hold the loan information for reference. Like if you need to go back and see why did they get this charge, you could see.
Okay,
So
I'm
in that
just
case,
making.
like the lost item processing fee might even be usable as a replacement. I get why we talked. I mean, whatever, we talked in a lot. We talked about a lot of things. I understand having a separate lost item and replacement fee, but processing fees. But I would guess, Tom, if you test this, that paying the lost item fee will close the loan, and the lost item processing fee will just linger or not, depending on what the policy says.
I agree. I didn't want to say that, yeah, that's how it works, because I haven't tested it, but my recollection is that is how it works, is that if you pay the, because they're separate accounts, it's easier to track. Because you're paying the lost item fee, that triggers the loan to be closed, and the other processing fee, overdue fees, and all that other stuff are just additional accounts that are open that happen to be associated with that same item and are loan. They don't actually stop the loan from closing. I was kind of curious, like, what people's thoughts were, if they should kind of remain that way or if it should still kind of be a blocker for the loan closing. But it sounds like it should kind of remain that way. And also, kind of get back on the replacement copy thing. I think if the functionality that I'm showing on the screen right now, with having an actual replacement copy functionality in Folio that allows people to review it in that, I would almost change the replacement copy options to be more like the lost copy options, where you either can set a flat replacement copy or have a to be assessed by staff. Primarily because I think with the universities that there's the universities that are doing both. There's ones that might just charge a $10 replacement processing fee, but then there's ones like Cornell that actually will go through and look at how much it's going to cost us to actually like stiffen the book or rebind it or something of that nature. Okay, cool. Really interesting conversation. Thank you, everybody. And we're at 6 minutes, so I'm going to say everyone go to lunch if you're in the correct time zone to do so.
Or the desk if your staff has called out sick. So I'm headed to the desk.
This is one thing I like about working from home, is nobody can call me in to work at the circ desk.
Indeed.
Yeah. I
Thanks,
kind of prefer a little
Tom.
bit, but yeah. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye. You
Bye.
too.